Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Day on Off Talkle Empire. Down goes Iowa. There were many games that occurred this week, but Iowa was certainly one of them. Tune in for many important details, statistics, analysis, and other information this week on another exciting and very Iowa-centered episode of Off Talkle Empire featuring America's favorite Iowa Hawkeyes. Go Corn.
Your source for Big Ten talk, it's Off Tackle Empire!
Welcome back to Off Tackle Empire, the official podcast of the official blog of SB Nation's Big Ten coverage. It's about the driest that I can possibly introduce it. We're getting to a, well, not entirely dry part of the year, but it's starting to feel a little cooler, finally. Now, it was the season for it a few weeks ago, but it's actually finally starting to turn to fall weather. Nevertheless, I'm Steve Braun, aka Pentasaurus. I'm here as always with Phyllis and Krzyzewski. Talk about Big Ten football.
Yeah, it was a long summer in which the dry season, but like the dry part never happened. And so I've had to cut the grass every 3 days for like 6 months now.
That's weird because have you seen our front lawn? Now, we live in the same city and all of the rain missed our front lawn.
Apparently so. But I have to admit, I kind of missed having the lawn turned to straw and such that I didn't have to deal with it.
You know, it's cool. I don't really like lawns. I think lawns are dumb. I'm not an English lord. They're kind of a shitty ecological thing. And I kind of... There's actually a house around here that has something that I've maybe been able to sort of get Leah on board with doing. It's something that's not really a lawn, but isn't really disorganized and intrusive and overly tall. But in any case, plant more butterfly bushes. Plant more milkweed.
Yeah, I think I'm on the same page with you there. There are a few
lawns are dumb.
There are a few other houses in my neighborhood that do like the full front yard garden thing instead.
Yeah.
That feels like a lot of work.
But there is somebody that does it here around here that seems to have done it in a way that seems manageable and not aesthetically disorganized. Of course, I do still need my little patch of grass in the back for my dogs to poop in.
Sure. And that's all well and good. But yeah, in terms of like a lawn that I have to not only cut, but edge, it's a lot. And I'm not putting like Roundup or any of that stuff in my water table, so don't even suggest
it. How long would you say that you spend edging a week? Okay, because I spent about three and a half hours edging on Saturday.
I was going to say altogether, it's certainly no less than a couple hours on a weekly basis, especially, you know, summer, it gets nice, it's, you know, steamy as it is.
You know, so. I thought that I was done edging when Purdue appeared to have scored a touchdown on a dive for the pylon. I thought I was going to be done edging then, but it turns out I had about another half hour of edging. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Got to introduce the Windflight Tri Brewster of the Week. It is by Cadillac Straits Brewing. It is Valhalla Girls Nordic Blonde Ale. You see, the girls in Valhalla are very picky. They generally don't like you to have losses on your resume. There are some teams that are headed there right now. 7-0 Michigan State. All the guys on bye except for Penn State, but I'm talking mostly about Ohio State, Michigan. Valhalla could contain any multitudes of these, but somebody fell from the ranks of Valhalla bound this week, and it turns out now the Valhalla girls won't return their phone calls. They gave them a fake number. And they didn't do the life hack of then, you know, texting to make sure or giving him back the number with a digit wrong.
Yeah. It's Again, we're going to see how we manage to get to a full hour worth of content with just five games on the slate this week. As you mentioned, number of teams on the byes, a number of the more interesting teams in the conference on byes, because we weren't going to get resolution on Penn State's quarterback situation. Ohio State's death machine had to sit in idle for a week. Michigan's been building momentum, and they had to take a little bit of a pause. Always an interesting balance between, well, you know, you want your team to be able to rest up at some point, but are you concerned that taking a week off is gonna disrupt your momentum? So, not that they have control over that. That's just something that they ask coaches because they feel like they have to.
Aha, yes. This beer is very rich and golden and quite rather boisterous, if you will. But also, not so much thick as it is firm, solid, strong, good breeding stock, if you will. More Nordic than Teutonic, so sorry, Iowa.
So, it may come through on the audio quality as well, but you've got a little bit of a tickle there in your throat. Give yourself a good, nice, clear, and then, oh man, do I have anything that you could spit in to get that out of you? Oh wait, I do! Michigan State 20, Indiana 15. Old Spitty is home. Order is restored. And this was a very unappealing game to watch, start to finish. The offense certainly picked up a little bit in the second half in both directions, but this is why I'm still a little bit hesitant to do anything more than just kind of savor the flavor while it lasts. I'm not, even at this point, like, the game against Michigan is different because after last year, I will never think we don't have a chance to win that game again, but I'm not willing to think beyond that yet with Michigan State, despite going to 7-0, because this offensive line is still really bad. That's the simplest way to explain it, is that this offensive line is still full of guys who have played a ton of football, but have been parts of offenses that just have not produced. This year, that they've changed that narrative a little bit and painted themselves as this big play offense is true, but a lot of that stuff is due to blown run fits, and is due, frankly, to creative play calling and good play by the receivers.
So then do you think that a lot of the success of Kenneth Walker has kind of to do with more him than this line?
Probably 80-20%, if I'm being generous. If you were to go back and cut up his longest plays on the season, I would bet that just about all of them that go for more than 5 to 7 yards are going to involve him basically stopping momentum, cutting back dramatically, bouncing a play outside that wasn't supposed to go there, and just because he's got a little burst that most linebackers don't, that he's able to get separation and break long ones off.
As an offensive line, you have to give him something, but you're saying that a lot of it comes down to his vision.
Yeah, well, the offensive line refers to him as the eraser because he erases their mistakes. And so the thing is then, when you go up against a defense that is both fundamentally sound and has a week to prepare, what Indiana did was told their defensive ends to split wide, make sure they can take... They treated Kenneth Walker like you would treat a really dangerous dual-threat quarterback. Like, keep him in the pocket, don't let him bounce outside, and then trust that their excellent linebackers, McFadden and Cam Jones, would be able to finish most of the plays, and they did. That's the other thing you have to say, is Indiana's linebackers, like Nebraska's, were good enough to bring Walker down in those one-on-one situations. Again, did not help that Michigan State's offensive linemen were not giving him clean lanes to run through, not picking off the linebackers. And if you want really the most compelling statistical piece of data for this, is the percentage of his yards that are after first contact. Almost like 70-80% of his yards are after contact. And that's an impressive thing on his part, but it also kind of suggests that he's not really getting a whole lot of good opportunities from this line. So that's not really news. Earlier in the season, like the Miami game, it kind of looked like they had really turned a corner. But this game, the Nebraska game, reminders that this is still a group with a very defined ceiling. And even though they're still rotating, they're basically doing like hockey style lines. Like, they're playing the whole second offensive line. So they got 9 guys playing. The fact that there's not a whole lot of difference between the two is, for one thing, telling about the starters. It's also a little discouraging that even playing that many guys, they're not playing any of the young guys. Like, the last couple D'Antonio classes are not represented in the playing group.
Has Michigan State beaten anybody that's going to a bowl game?
I still think Indiana's going, even though they're probably going to fall to 2-5 next week, because I think eventually their offense showed some signs of life. I think they've realized they need to do more with Stephen Carr than bash him into the line. They got him outside. They threw it to him a little bit. Their best approach to me, honestly, would be to let Penix take his sweet time getting back, because I think Tuttle has the ability to win them a few games. And after Ohio State, the schedule lightens up dramatically. They would obviously have to win 4 of their last 5 games, but I think they could do it. And then looking elsewhere, I still think Nebraska is a much better team than their record shows, but at some point, yep, there's not enough data points for me to look at and be like, all right, well, they're still going to figure it out and get to what? 6 wins? Are they going to, like, do they get off the mat at this point from 3-5 and get to a bowl game with their remaining schedule? It doesn't really feel like it.
They really couldn't afford to drop this one, the one that they did this week.
Yeah, and Miami has likewise continued to languish. Northwestern is back to 3-3. I guess you can say that, yeah, we'll see next week. If they give Michigan a real game, then, yeah, you could talk me into Northwestern getting back to it. I think the West is wide open. And it feels really like, with a couple exceptions, pretty much any team could beat any other team.
Sorry, what you're saying is that anybody could win the Big Ten West except Illinois.
I'm not even talking about the division. I'm talking about winning enough games to get to a bowl. Any team in the Big Ten West can win a couple games except Illinois.
Yeah,
and as I was stumbling to that thought, I was like, "Oh, you shouldn't say that's gonna make him feel bad." But it was already.
Look, we've got to beat Penn State or Iowa.
Well,
yes. Show me the quarterback that does that. I will show you a quarterback that does not currently play for Illinois.
Oh dear, yeah. So anyway, to keep this up, so Indiana also had a little bit of the same blueprint Nebraska did here, in that really the best way to deal with Michigan State's offense is play the same way that they do on defense, which is to keep all the big stuff in front of you and make them execute a drive. Make them show you that they can go 6, 8, 10 plays without a false start or a hold or just a blown block. They can't do it, and it's in most part because of the 5 guys up front. I know that's very critical, and I try not to... I'm not naming individual guys. I mean, I don't think there's any question as a unit they were bad. And the film study they're doing now, and will do for the next 13 days until Michigan, will reveal that to them. So
also had 12 penalties for 134 yards. Yeah. Kind of a messy game all around. 5 turnovers, 3 for Indiana, 2 for Michigan State. 16 total penalties, 12 of them by the Spartans. But the really messy stat that I'm seeing in here is Jack Tuttle with a downright 2021 Roethlisberger stat line of 52 attempts for 188 yards.
And, you know, I've actually made the time a few times this season to participate in game threads. I mostly go over the only callers because when I'm in shouting game thread mode, I don't really want to deal with other fan bases that much. So what I see a lot over there, though, is a lot of stamping of feet over the amount of completions that they give up through the air on defense, and the fact that they've given up a fair amount of conversions on 3rd and 4th down. But I'm still willing to, like, even though, again, you get used for so many years, even the last couple of years, really, D'Antonio's defenses were still really good. They played tight coverage, and sure, they got burned occasionally, but they still wouldn't give you free stuff cheap up front, and you got used to that so that it feels like, oh man, we can't stop anybody. This offense is going up and down the field. Sure they are. And then in this game, your defense forces them to kick 4 field goals and you end up winning by 5, because in a game where your offense couldn't carry their end of the bargain, your defense and even your special teams came up. Matt Coughlin was a guy who, because of some very makeable misses earlier this season, I was fed up with. I'm like, there's got to be another option on the roster. It turns out there really isn't. And in kind of tricky wind conditions, he hit a couple pretty long field goals. I think like a 49-yarder and a 51 or 52-yarder, which is about the edge of his effective range, and hit both of them. And again, what ended up being a 5-point game. So Tucker often harps on the importance of complementary football. Like the pick six they got from Cal Halliday is about it was the only points they got in the first half, and for a while it looked like it was going to be the only touchdown they got. They ended up reaching into the playbook a little bit when the base stuff wasn't working. So I give them some credit there. doing what it needed to be done. I will say the refs had another really difficult game in this, but I almost feel like that's barely even worth mentioning because it's true in almost every game you watch, college or pro. There's just all these occasions where it's like, God, you know, between how... So the fact that they make all these mistakes necessitates more replays, which causes there to be even more commercials. Fox is already terrible like this. This was like a 4-hour and 10-minute broadcast time on a game that, well, it's not... Indiana threw the ball a lot, but it's not like there were so many scoring plays. Like, there shouldn't have been... It should not have taken that
long. This was a pretty Big Ten game. I mean, a lot of it dominated by defensive stat lines. Micah McFadden was absolutely all over the place.
Yeah, he and
very
Jones...
Very disruptive. 2.5 TFLs and a pass breakup.
Yeah, he and Jones were great.
Cam Jones had a breakup of what would have been a really crazy touchdown as Peyton Thorne was rolling to his left, being pursued on what was it, a third down, I think?
I think it was, yeah.
And somehow he had an open receiver, but he wasn't quite open enough.
Yeah, and so as a throw, Thorne flips it down the sideline. Trey Mosley does get behind Jones, but Jones gets just enough vertical to bat it away with his fingertips, yeah.
Because for as bad as Jack Tuttle was, Peyton Thorne actually had a lower quarterback rating in this one.
He did, but honestly, the one interception hit Trey Mosley in the collarbone and popped up in the air and was intercepted. The other one was definitely a forced ball, and he missed a few. Like, he missed a deep shot to Naylor that should have been intercepted. Another play, he had Naylor wide open, and it looks... I mean, honestly, even at this point, a large percentage of the missed throws that Thorne has are aiming for Naylor, which makes me think maybe that's partly still on Speedy. But he also, I think there were probably 4 or 5 drops today, which when you're not throwing the ball that many times in a game like this, where again, much like the second half against Nebraska, Michigan State's offense could do nothing before halftime in this game.
So 35 total points, and 20% of them came on a pick six for Michigan State, and the other 20% came as part of the hunt to Thorne to hunt exchange.
Yeah, and that, again, so some credit has to be given here that they dial a play that, man, when Hunt threw that ball up, they had a trick play where a tight end ends up throwing a pass and a guy got in the backfield and forced him off his intended line enough that, but when he let it go, I was like, well, that's getting picked and housed for sure. And then not only does it drop in past the two Indiana guys in the neighborhood, but the quarterback makes probably the best catch of the day for either team and gets a foot down. And the ref still called him out. That play had to be reviewed. The side judge is right there staring at Thorne's foot, a white cleat with green between it and the sideline. Nope, still out.
There were an awful lot. I mean, Indiana had one that I don't think anybody thought was a touchdown. It was called a touchdown on the field. 5-10 minute review, and I mean, this game was just a chore to watch. Speaking of a chore, let's talk about one more thing here.
Yeah.
Game management featuring Tom Allen. There's been a lot of suspect game management in the Big Ten this year so far.
I don't know why it is that I'm zeroing in on this issue so much. I think it really might be because the first game I watched, I was so excited. We were at Northwestern, and Tucker just handled the end of the first half so weird. Ended up kicking a 60-yard field goal attempt, like, with wind. Like, of course he's not going to hit that. And so maybe it's just because with the timeouts, it tends to take so long that's like a big period of actual time. You just pay attention to it. But
Also, probably we hang out a lot, and I never shut up about it because we've lost 2 games like this.
That's true. Maybe you have... Maybe I caught it from you. But in any case, and late in the first half, Tom Allen's got... the Indiana has the ball on offense. They have the ball at the MSU 47, so just on the scoring side of midfield. 4th and 4. It's pretty late in the second quarter, probably like 2.5-3 minutes or something like that left. And keep in mind, to this point, Michigan State's offense has gotten about 30 total yards in the game to that point. Allen has all 3 of his timeouts, 4th and 4. Instead of just going for it or punting, they do the thing where you line up and try to draw your opponent offside, and it doesn't work, and they call a timeout. And then they do it again, and it doesn't work, and they call a timeout. And then they punt. And so there's no part of it that makes sense to me, all right? There's like, it's like a compound fracture where there's all these breaks that don't make that you don't want to happen, you're not just going forward and forth and for a very makeable distance. You're using a timeout to punt when you're in a spot on the field where 5 more yards of space to punt is not bad
calling
for your punter.
Calling a timeout to punt when you're losing.
Calling 2 timeouts to punt when you're losing. Because, of course, then what happens, as anyone in that stadium would have told you, Michigan State goes 3-and-out and they punt the ball right back to Indiana, who's then able to get back into a long now, field goal range, and they miss the field goal.
It's crazy because not only are you Tom Allen, you're a defensive guy, but the defense has really put the clamps on in this game. So you had, again, you know, Brett Bielema did this, calling a timeout to punt while losing late in the game. I mean, that's just unforgivably ignorant of your situation. Those timeouts are precious. When you call one, you better go for it. Because if you're going to call a timeout in that situation, then what you're saying is that you're not going to need it on defense. That's the only reason you call a timeout there,
yeah.
Is if you're not going to need it on defense because you're going to get the first down right here. It's just criminally, I mean,
and it's
whatever, like, man. Some people just don't have it when it comes to, I mean.
Tom Allen's a guy that I have a lot of respect for as a coach, and he is also very powerfully in the mold of Mark D'Antonio, Kirk Ferentz. They're not going to do anything that's an undue risk. They're not going to do anything that prejudices their defense.
Well, you talk about risk, though. That's entirely conventional coaching wisdom. It's not
right.
Actually.
Yeah.
It's not actually a robust risk-reward assessment from a statistical standpoint would not support that as being a risk-averse move.
Exactly.
Is my point.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying is that, and I'm sure that in his sober, you know, film-crunching mind, he knows that. But a lot of these people, I think he's among them, I think you can count a lot of Big Ten coaches among them, they get to the situation in the game and they just can't help but do the thing that, you know, throughout football history, conventional coaching wisdom is that you got to do the most conservative thing or else people are going to, you know, call you stupid. Well, guess what? We're going to call you stupid.
Yeah, because we're at a point in the history of this game where we know better.
Yep.
Where we understand, like,
There's been enough data,
the computers
and the numbers
tell
have been
us,
run.
The computers tell us stuff. And that's that, actually, punting is not always winning. So,
however, punting is a discussion you can have by itself. Calling a timeout to punt while you are losing late in a game is just horrible malpractice.
Well, and look, this is still the first half. Indiana had many other opportunities to win this game. There's no question about that. Especially because late in the game...
Late in the half, I should say.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about a different thing now. Late in the game, Chester Kimbrough comes on a Fox blitz, strips and recovers a fumble, and then 2 plays later, Michigan State throws an interception right back to him. Like, I get that I can't have it both ways because in this situation, D'Antonio would have plowed it into the line 3 times and punted, and they would have had the ball back anyway. And against Miami, in a similar situation, Tucker goes for the kill shot and it lands and they break through, they win the game. And so I understand that, again, I can't have my cake and eat it too. I can't want a coach who plays a little more aggressively and doesn't just go into a shell and then not deal with the consequences of it, which is, again, a badly underthrown ball that was intercepted.
But that's a lot easier to deal with than calling a timeout to punt.
While you're losing near the end of the half. Yeah. All right. So anyway,
speaking of things that are not easy to deal with.
Oh boy.
Minnesota 30, Nebraska 23.
Yeah.
And Minnesota led this one throughout. Mm-hmm. And essentially what happened was there were kind of 2 games that were played. I am not going to say a tale of 2 halves because it just that phrase has nothing to do with that novel.
Right.
Okay. But the halves did look very different in that the first half basically just was dominated by Minnesota completely. And in the second half, Nebraska played as well as they possibly could have played while still not really chipping away. To give you an idea of what I mean, there was a sequence, I don't remember if it was third quarter or fourth quarter, where you know, it felt like Nebraska had the ball this entire time. And My wife was doing something with the dogs, and she came back, still couldn't believe that the score hadn't changed. And I told her that what had happened was Nebraska, down 5, had gone for it on 4th and goal from the 1, gotten stuffed, forced to punt, then gotten back to, you know, inside the red zone to 4th and 4, elected to kick it, missed, of course.
Because it was a field goal from inside of 30 yards. So, of course, Connor Culp missed it this year.
And then,
you got to take three false starts and back him up to a range where he can hit it.
Well, the amazing thing about that was, as soon as they sent him out, I'd been tweeting from the Off Tackle Empire account a series of increasingly distorted versions of the picture of Scott Frost anxiously chewing on his finger there. And I teed up another one saying, and it somehow remains a 5-point game as Culp misses a field goal. I teed that up.
You didn't hit send, but...
I didn't hit send, and then they went... The third quarter ended, and I was just like, okay, I mean, I might as well send it because I know how this is going to happen. So what happened after that was Minnesota got the ball, went and punted, and Nebraska took over at their own 11 and immediately gave up a safety on the would-be go-ahead drive.
Yeah.
It's just... I think I said this to you yesterday. If you have a situation where you've got, like, you know, inside of 5 minutes to go, and you absolutely need to lose this game to get fired, and you can pick any quarterback in the history of college football, I'm picking Adrian Martinez. And I say get fired, like, you need somebody that's not going to make it look like you're tanking, but that's going to just... do the most crucial, like the most wrong possible thing in the most critical moment. Because he had some throws this game that were unbelievable.
But that's the story of his career. And it's if you need the guy who is going to make it look like, man, this really should be working much better than it is right now. Oh my God, what did he just do? We have to fire the coach. Then, Adrian Martinez is that
single
guy.
Single start has looked like his very first start. I don't remember what happened in his first start, but I'm saying this to say, like, wow, if he could only iron out these crucial mistakes, he sure has some potential. But he's a senior now.
Yeah.
I mean, we've said the same exact things. It's just, it's almost become exhausting to say, but, you know, they've been doing this against much better teams, playing more even games.
And we're going to say this about a few other teams in the Big Ten West over the next week or two, I think, which is that after a very embarrassing early season, remember that loss to Bowling Green? That was like 3 weeks ago. And it feels like it was 3 years
ago. Bowling Green at that point had the worst offense in the country.
Yeah, they've stabilized a little bit since then, but Minnesota in a West that suddenly looks much more wide open, and we'll get there, listeners. We'll get there. But they're on, you know, running back number 3, and Bryce Williams had the back-breaking touchdown to put the game away. They got Chris Ottman-Bell back, and their offense looks so much better when he's in there, and they have a true deep threat, which, again, I still don't really understand because their other receivers have some talent. I don't understand why they can't put together a functional passing game. Well, I do, really. It's because Tanner Morgan has a noodle arm, and if the throw
is... He had a couple of just horrible interceptions.
Back-to-back plays that gave Nebraska... basically defibrillated them. Like, there was no reason this should have been close after the way the first half went. Should not have been close.
Look at these stats. They're roughly even. Minnesota, they got roughly the same number of yards total. Minnesota ran a little more. Nebraska passed a little more. They had the exact same penalty figure. Minnesota ran the ball more times. Nebraska was a little more pass heavy. They weren't as efficient with the passing.
As you'd expect, because Minnesota's protecting a lead.
With the difference being that Minnesota turned it over twice and Nebraska turned it over 0 times. And yet, it was a 30-23 game with it was about 30-16 when kind of garbage time kicked in. I mean, basically this game felt, you know what this game felt like? This felt like the Illinois game for Nebraska.
Where it's like, how did you lose this game?
Well, how did you lose this game? How did it never look like you were going to win?
Yeah.
Like, they were playing from behind. It finished with virtually the same score. They were playing from behind the whole way while kind of looking like they were a little bit better down to down.
Yeah. And
but every time there was a really important situation that could turn the tide of the game, Nebraska fucked it up.
Yeah, they came up short. And I don't think you can blame Scott Frost for... the kicker missing basically an extra point field goal. Like, I don't think you can blame him.
There comes a certain point when you have to recognize the situation that you have, though.
Yeah.
Connor Culp has been so so reliably bad in these situations. Not to mention, you were down 5 points at the time.
Yeah.
And your offense seemed to be rolling. I kind of questioned the decision to not go for it there.
Yeah,
especially to even huddle up, but...
I suppose. And it does ultimately come back to the coach, because he's the one who picks the players, and he's the one who picks the non-existent special teams coach.
As people who are not generally sympathetic to Scott Frost, there just are some things where it's like, God, like, how is it that God hates you a lot more than we do? Like, did you see that clip of him walking into the stadium getting stopped by the security? I'm the head coach.
Well, I think you might have been the one pointing out, like, man, he could have been a much bigger tool about that, but it wasn't me.
He almost looked, like, sad. It's like...
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Why doesn't anybody recognize me?
I wear the same polo, yeah. And of course, I made the comment that I'm sure what the security guard's thinking is, oh yeah, you're coach for about another 2 weeks there, bud.
Oh, man. Chris Ottman-Bell was a big difference maker for Minnesota in this one. Some reason, I had been unaware of the whole crab thing.
Oh, yeah, it was news to me, too. Somebody, Ben, one of our Minnesota guys...
And then
I
looked online, and, like, everybody's using the crab emoji. It's like, wait, how is this the first I've ever heard of Chris Ottman-Bell being crab?
Well, because I don't think he doesn't spell it C-R-I-S like Chris Carter. It's the usual spelling of Chris, which does not lend itself to crab.
Crab.
Trab.
Crab.
And so, of course, we immediately bombarded the Slack channel with all the crab people.
That one from
South Park, and then also the episode of It's Always Sunny where Frank and Charlie go and fish for Delaware River crabs, and he says, we're crab people now! That was the one that came to my mind first, and then the South Park thing right after it. So, yeah, that's going to be in our kind of how we think about Minnesota now, because there is a little bit of a South Park crab people mentality, cult of personality thing they're still doing in Minnesota. So that all kind of plays. That fits. I get it.
You know, they, like, a lot of times you see things with, like, I'm sure you've seen pictures of owners looking like their dogs, but they say that the more you're married to somebody, the more you start to look like them. Now, who's going to come in after Tanner Morgan? And how much are they going to look like P.J. Fleck when they graduate?
Yeah. Honestly, I bet before he got to Minnesota, Tanner Morgan probably had a full, lush head of long, blonde hair. And now...
He looked like Trevor Lawrence.
And now he's basically just P.J. without the tie. yeah. So, all right. We got a couple other just dreary games to get through here. So let's try to power through this.
Rutgers... Well, first, let's talk about Nebraska's remaining schedule.
Oh, sure, yeah. That would put a bow on this nicely. Because
they're 3-5.
They played week 0 when they lost, so they're 3-5, yes.
They're 3-5, and they've got Purdue, Ohio State, at Wisconsin, and home against Iowa. And they got to get 3 wins to go to a bowl. We're not talking about competing for big things. We're talking about a situation where
every one
of their losses is by one score.
Yeah, all 5 losses by one score. We're talking about where they need 3 out of those 4 games so their fans can complain about how expensive San Francisco is as they go to the Red Box Bowl.
Sorry, that's not anywhere near San Francisco.
Well, you'd probably fly into San Francisco to get there.
Actually, I don't think that people did. I mean, it's that far away.
I don't know if you guys fly to San Jose. You're still paying Bay Area.
I can't remember exactly
where it
was. You're
paying Bay Area prices is my point.
Yeah, it's essentially something kind of like Auburn Hills, but for tech. Where it's just like, it's just a big industrial park.
Yeah, Santa Clara, right?
Santa Clara, yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
It's just been serious Sisyphus stuff for Scott Frost
here. Well, and the thing is, whether they beat Purdue next week or not, because I, like, I think they could, because you mean to tell me that Purdue isn't set up for a little bit of a letdown coming off the win they just got?
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to that, but yeah, you know, that's a situation that, where Purdue,
especially if they don't win, that Ohio State
Purdue
game
can be had.
That Ohio State game could be the last bullet in this coaching tenure.
Yeah. I mean, of course, we hit you with some more off-tackle empire ASMR there with some serious Sisyphus stuff from Scott Frost.
Just slow, play that down, you know, play that back, slow it down to about a 0.75 speed.
And so I'd be able to really get it if
really
I weren't shouting at the mic in the middle of the table because somebody forgot theirs and we're going back to the old school two-sided setup.
Yeah, well, how many years did we make that work before we got sophisticated and I bought my own mic? So anyway,
but you didn't like unbuy it or anything. Okay, anyway, Northwestgers.
Yeah, the final result here is whatever, but we need to discuss this fake punt first, second, and foremost. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So,
oh yeah.
Northwestern did win this game and did win it by two scores, so it's probably something that'll get lost in the annals of history pretty quickly, but maybe, and I feel like whenever something like this happens in this modern era of hyperbole, we've got to make the big impression, the over-the-top take. Everyone always says, oh, worst fake field goal ever, worst fake punt ever, worst onside ever, worst whatever. No, really, like, I don't know how, and I don't remember if it was Evan Wildcat, I think it was Evan Wildcat who broke his arm, maybe it was Creighton, but somebody in our writer group said that, look, with what this play, and so what the play basically was is it snaps to the punter who's in a normal punt formation and then he just runs straight up the middle. I think he had to get like 6 or 8 yards or something. Like it wasn't a fourth and short or whatever. And he gets tackled for a loss and gets hurt. And there's one of two possibilities, which is that they just never actually practiced this. So they didn't know how dumb it looks. Or they did practice it, and their defense and their punt coverage team was so woefully unprepared that it worked like a charm, and they thought it was a great play.
I'm not sure what's more damning.
Yeah, I don't know which would be worse.
I mean, because the thing is, the only way that I would fight you on this being the worst college football fake punt of all time is because it wasn't run into a 4-3 base defense
that's
like
true.
The Justin Fields.
I was gonna say that's true. Is that it
that,
wasn't?
That
yeah.
still remains my number one. That being said.
What I would say...
This one was... Do you remember the Greg Schiano fourth down fake against Michigan where we thought, like, how can you possibly think anyone
yeah,
would fall
you,
for
yeah,
that?
I mean,
that was a huge brain move compared to this.
Yeah, but no, the counter-argument I would have for you on the Justin Fields thing is you're still putting the ball in the hands of Justin Fields there. Like, maybe he will do something cool, even though...
What, like,
Georgia's,
run
Georgia's,
through the entire base 4-3 defense?
Of Alabama, right. But... And, you know, I'm not giving that amount of credit to Kirby Smart because they didn't play Justin Fields. They didn't know, they clearly didn't understand what he was capable of. So, anyway, we're spending a lot of time on that. But, yeah, that was not something we were going to let slide, even though Northwestern won this game.
I sure as hell wish that I could have put down some money on will there be a failed fake punt in Northwestern Rutgers because I would have absolutely hammered it at basically any odds.
Yeah, you would have
considering Greg Schiano's
you would have game stonked that and bought yourself a vacation home. But you know, in the cold light of a normal off season and kind of the receding COVID weirdness, like not being as big of a factor in how teams prepare, I think the size of the exact task that Schiano has here is becoming more apparent, right? They got Bo Melton back today, and that was very helpful. He had a very good day from a statistical standpoint. And they still, despite getting back a capable number one receiver, had nothing going on offense because they have
such... So they had
such...
222 yards of offense,
yeah.
Which is terrible.
Yeah.
Bo Melton had 101 of those.
Yeah. And
they had 63 yards rushing on 34 attempts. They went 1.9.
Such a deficiency of talent. And it's not, you know, in the past, in isolated moments, Isaiah Pacheco has looked like a workforce back, but he's done nothing for them this year because this offensive line gets very little push. The pass game, even with a little bit of a dual threat in Noah Vedral, who, again, I think from a coaching perspective, they're getting the most out of what they've got, but they don't have enough.
I always thought his skill set was better used as kind of a Raheem Blackshear stunt double, where it's kind of a guy that you want to get in space.
I've never thought of him that way. He, to me, his running style,
this is not a good comparison because he's nowhere near this talented, but I think of him as like a Brandon Jacobs. Like, he's a phone booth guy. I'm not afraid of him in space at all. They've always had, yeah, whether it was Blackshear, Aaron Young, they've always had like a second receiver type back who they use alongside him instead of him. I've never thought of Pacheco in those terms, but they're not getting great use out of him. But it's also understandable because this line really doesn't allow it. But man, you know, going into last year, Schiano hit the portal hard, brought in a whole bunch of talent and all, just felt like he needed to do that again. Like hit that transfer button a couple more times, because they're still short quite a few guys.
Because the thing is, and you hear me talk about this all the time with what Illinois' situation is right now, you got to get wins. The way that college football is right now, you got to get wins or people are going to stop listening to you. Well, Schiano's got 3 wins.
He does. And the other thing to keep in mind is the early signing day period, I think, is the first week of December this year. It's coming up quick. And he's got a really good, especially for Rutgers class coming in. Now, it's not good enough to close the gap between him and the other teams in the East. But to improve relative to teams like Northwestern, it will be.
And I wonder what permanent crossover they have, because if it's anything like the deal that we got, they're going to have like Iowa.
Yeah, I don't know. That changes what, next year or the year after?
Next year. Yeah, this is the last Dylan Utgers. That we really, both of us need to petition the Big Ten.
I guess I'll sign on to that. I guess what I'm saying is that if you also sign mine, which is Michigan State needs to play Northwestern in August every year.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
You can see Northwestern's defense obviously looking a little better, not just from the standpoint of they're playing a little weaker opponent than they were playing earlier, but
they're cleaning some stuff up. Yeah.
Yeah. You also have to give them some credit for, you know, we were talking about them as maybe being Illinois bad. They're clearly rebounding a little bit. They beat a Rutgers team that's not trending in the right direction at this point, but not trending in the right direction for this season.
Yeah,
trending in the right direction overall.
Right.
For this season, it's not. It's looking like maybe we were a little higher on them than we should have been.
Well, I think we did a pretty good job of qualifying it because, again, like, all the praise that we get is like, yeah, you know, is this not the most impressive 3-win campaign you've ever seen? Always mentioning the 3-win part was still there.
Yeah, it's Dennis Green in the early 80s.
Right. It, you know, relative to historical expectations, I think they're doing fine. So yeah, for Northwestern here, there are some encouraging signs that they're getting back on track a little bit. Like, this offense is still not going to scare many people, but if you play this kind of game, given what the Big Ten West has mostly looked like this year, they can find their way to a bowl. They won the turnover battle 2-0, did not allow any sacks, so the offensive line played considerably better. And again, Rutgers, not a tremendous front, but Julius Turner, Olukunle Fatukase, they have some guys who can be disruptive. And Northwestern only gave up one play of longer than 20 yards. Again, easy to do with this opponent, but consider some of the other offenses they're going to see in this division.
So, I mean, who do you think ends up shaking out as a Northwestern starter? Because I think Ryan Helinski seems to have kind of settled in as a guy that they're comfortable with.
Yeah, well, I mean, they didn't bench Hunter Johnson because he was hurt. They benched him because he was bad.
Yeah.
And then Andrew Marty came in and didn't get through a whole game before he got hurt.
Yeah.
Unfortunate, because it wasted an entire season of Rick and Morty impressions for us, as well as obviously for him, because he, by all reports, is a guy the team very much loves. But yeah, Helinski has been good enough. I mean, even in the games where the stat lines have not been impressive, like, you look at some of the passing combinations they call and how little they throw the ball, it's kind of like, well, what do you want the guy to do with what you're asking him, you know? So, yeah, I think they'd probably stick with Helinski. He's been good enough, and he's won him a couple games.
Maybe that for a game, you know, this was a fairly Big Ten game, that both teams had 17 third downs, and both teams converted exactly 5 of them. So there were a total of 10 for 34 on third down. Perfectly symmetrical. So
punching in, punching out.
So yeah, in the stock market game there, I bought Northwestern at a low, and I think I'm going to continue to, maybe if they don't go up too much, might add to my position.
Well, now you've got me curious, and I guess, well,
because I got some Northwestern for 42 Delaney bucks.
That's not bad. I don't know if you're necessarily going to want to buy ahead of a road trip to Michigan, but
yeah,
that's your, well, I mean, you can certainly hold.
I'm going to collect my dividends. Actually, I don't think I bought Northwestern at their low, but I'm certainly comfortable holding them through.
Sure.
Until we get to November.
You may, look, I think you go ahead. Can you set an option for after Michigan game?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right. So last order before we get into the big corny main course here. Wisconsin going in the out of conference quickly here in midseason, hosting the troops and just disrespecting them all night, as is typical of the unpatriotic communist Badgers. Army 14, Wisconsin 20. All right, so important thing for this game beyond getting the win was, do we see signs of life in the Wisconsin passing game? Okay, let's take a look. Deep dive into the numbers. What have we got? Oh, we got 8 for 15, 112 yards, 0 touchdowns, 0 picks. So that's a big no. And 4 of those completions were to the tight end Jake Ferguson. We already know he's a decent security blanket. They got nothing going on with this wide receiver group, and that's still the case. And you know what? Honestly, I can't help but wonder if maybe at this point they're just like, yeah, that's just what it's going to be. And so instead, what they've done is give their offensive output, or their bandwidth rather, to Braylon Allen in a timeshare with Malusi, and that seems to be rounding the run game into better shape, and they're gonna hope that 4 completions to Jake Ferguson a game is enough.
Yeah, you know, it's a game against Army, so it's all kinds of weirdness.
Yeah, it was always going to be relatively low possession. You were gonna figure that the score is not likely to get too far out of hand. But this is not the game plan to me of a coaching staff that thinks they're going to contend for the division this year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that. As far as this game is concerned, though, like, just the game, they were one, you know, the way that Army kind of came on in the fourth quarter, especially, they were one fumble away. I mean, there was one very crucial point of this game, and it was 13-7, and Army quarterback Jabari Laws was sacked by Leo Chanel. Now, of course, Army is a great opportunity for any opposing linebacker to pad their stats.
Oh yeah, so I think all their starters had more than 10 tackles.
I think he had 17 in this one. but of course, the big play was, stop! You violated the laws. So got 2.5 TFLs. And then Keanu Benton recovered the fumble. That was probably a pretty important play because Wisconsin scored on it.
Yeah, and it was a one-possession game.
Yeah, a one-possession game with Army.
So, yeah, this game plan where you throw the ball 16 times against an opponent you really should be able to beat pretty easily. Again, I understand that your first concern when you're 2-3 is winning the game. But it's also the maneuver of a staff that is aiming for bowl eligibility and not much more, because this team's ceiling right now is the passing game. They're bumping their head against it every time they play a good opponent. And unless and until Graham Mertz and, look, this year, these receivers are it. They don't have anybody they haven't tried who's worth putting on the field.
They had a little more production in the rushing game from Braylon Allen than they've been getting from Malusi and Berger in the beginning of the year.
Well, they gave Malusi plenty of carries too. That's why I mentioned the thing. They've basically found a what seems like the right combination in the backfield. So it's true that yes, the run game is better now, and they've kind of worked out how it's going to work. I still, man, talk about Jalen Berger going from the obvious heir apparent to on the outs. I mean, have fun at Rutgers, I guess, but. Yeah, it's just,
I don't really know what more you can make from a game against Army. I mean,
I guess. I mean, if you
stop playing Army.
No, playing a service academy midseason.
Get some help.
Get some help. I remember seeing a comment that Keanu Benton was hurt. I believe he was then able to return. If you were able to get out of a game with a service academy without any long-term injuries to any of your defensive linemen, then you have succeeded. So, you get the win, you're back in position for a bowl game. Again, this division certainly looks wide open, and now it's time to cut to why the division looks wide open. Purdue 24, Iowa 7.
Hey, man, are we going to award this the Dick Trip of the Week? Because, gotta be.
We've not consistently been giving that out, but yeah, I think
that has to be it.
I think this merits it. You're at home. You're coming off an emotional win against Penn State.
Emotional. Emotional usually implies that the emotions were positive.
Yeah, I'm not
Never
saying...
Never seen
no,
a
I'm
fan
not
base
saying
more
that.
Angry about beating number four at home.
Yeah, well, because one of their guys might have pretended to be hurt. I mean, one of them's out for the season after that, you know, but...
boy, he really is committed to the bit.
Boy, he's selling it. I just can't believe the extent he's going to sell this fake injury to slow down the high-octane Iowa offense. So, anyway, how do you go from number two in the country, much ballyhooed defense, to losing at home to an unranked Purdue team? Although, by the way, unranked no more, Purdue Boilermakers in the top 25, first time since 2007. Thump, what were you doing in 2007?
Oh, man. I was doing something I've not really done very much of since. I was enjoying the living hell out of Illinois football. And also... you know, I was watching him crank that Soulja Boy and Superman that ho.
Oh, it certainly does take you back, doesn't it?
Heard that song on the radio. Going to get more drinks at parties. That's what I did when that song came on. I get that it's funny, but it always sucked.
Yeah. Well, sorry. If you really want the story of why this game went the way it did, I can tell you in how the broadcast approach, because at the beginning of the game, they're always looking for a standout player on each team's offense to be like, all right, here's the guy you want to look at, pay attention to. And with Iowa, it's Tyler Linderbaum. And look, he's a really good player. He's going to be a first-round draft pick, probably going to play in the NFL for 10, 12 years, be a Pro Bowler and all that stuff. He's very good. It is very uncommon for that feature on a broadcast to deal with a guy who only touches the ball right at the beginning of the play and then never again. you know what I mean?
Because basically what they were saying throughout the second half was, and Iowa stuff for no gain here, but boy, was it not his fault.
Well, and honestly, they were right about that. Because
The
biggest problems in Iowa's offensive scheme, other than the whole design of the scheme, was that they had no way to deal with George Karlaftis, who dynamited the right side of the offensive line for Iowa all night. They didn't line him up over Linderbaum, because why would you do that? But this is the downside to Iowa football, right? Which is that when you need to be aggressive or adjust to what your opponent's doing.
Hold on there, Phil.
If I could...
Did you just suggest there was a downside to Iowa football?
I was
gonna... I'll tell you what. I do not take kindly to this kind of an accusation, okay? We're only talking about this because you had somebody come in.
I thought
some
I was,
guy that's been some guy that's been at Notre Dame.
I was gonna finish a thought.
Some guy that's been at Notre Dame come in here and do all of this passing and rotate three quarterbacks into a game. Now this is the Big Ten, okay? This isn't communist China, all right? This isn't the Soviet Union
where everybody gets a chance. Is that like what?
No. This is Ricky Stanzi's America, okay? This is the country that I was born and raised and served for an unspecified amount of time for. What were we talking about?
Well, you brought up Ricky Stanzi. He's gone.
Yeah, love it or leave it is what I'm saying. Okay, so if giving the ball to your fullback 15 times a game isn't good enough for you, Purdue, then there's the SEC's right there, okay? Right across your doorstep.
What were we talking about?
We're talking about Iowa won this game on the merits of American football as we know it in the Big Ten Conference. It was Purdue's decision to pervert to pervert the nature of the game that we know and love that enabled them.
By throwing the ball downfield. Didn't like that.
That's not how you do it. That's not. We used to go man up. You put a hat on a hat. We didn't even have the hats back then, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you just put rocks on your head and bash them into each other. It's true. Purdue barely ran any outside zone in this game.
I don't know how you do that and call it a fundamentally sound game plan. And so the good news really is that between however much time Kirk Ferentz has left and then Brian's inevitable tenure of at least equal length, Iowa fans only have about 30 more years of this offense to look forward to.
Why are you denigrating America's small business owners like Kirk Ferentz? Just because he chooses to keep his operation in the family, wouldn't you do the same for your small business? You're denigrating the lifeblood of the heartland of America, and I will not stand for it.
Yeah, I mean, consecutive quarterback sneaks in the red zone when you have Tyler Goodson to hand the ball to and Sam Laporta you could throw it to, arguably is a fireable offense, but there's no such thing in this program.
You know, at some point, Iowa should really consider covering David Bell.
Right. So, let's go right to that, actually. So, David Bell's a junior, which means he's only played 3 games against Iowa, a division opponent to this point in his career. But probably going to be it, because obviously he's going to be an NFL player if he wants to go, and he should go get paid. His career numbers in 3 games against Iowa are as follows. 37 receptions, 558 yards, and 5 touchdowns. And we give Phil Parker a lot of credit for his defensive scheme when it works, but when it doesn't work, it really doesn't work. And they don't do anything differently to try to account for it not working. Jeff Brohm's now gone 4-1 against Iowa in his time at Purdue. Without that, if he's even 2-3 against them, like, you know, as he would be against a typical other good team, he's probably coaching for his job this season. These Iowa wins plus that Ohio State game really are his resume there.
So, basically, I think that Ohio State against Jeff Brohm is the same as Jeff Brohm against Iowa.
Huh.
It's the same record that Lovie Smith had against Rutgers.
4-1, yeah. Boy, and it's not like this was just a matter of, oh, well, there's a particular weakness in the scheme to David Bell. No, it's that, the turnovers were never going to last forever for Iowa, and you had a great game from Adel. You mentioned they played 3 quarterbacks, yes, and they brought in Plummer and Burton for situations, but really, this game was about Aiden O'Connell absolutely mincemeating the Iowa defense, and they couldn't do anything about it because they didn't have defensive backs who could cover Bell, or really Purdue had a couple other receivers get loose for some plays, and their pass rush wasn't able to get home against Purdue's kind of meh offensive line.
The game plan was absolutely phenomenal for Purdue. The play calling was great. They kept getting guys with just enough speed to beat their guys to the sticks on the edge.
Yeah.
They were getting the first downs by just putting the ball in those situations, getting them to guys just fast enough to beat their guy to the edge.
Purdue was great on third down in this game.
Yes, they were. And it's not just that they executed well. They also, they called really good plays. I mean, everything was... It really was a treat to watch.
They talked about a couple occasions, and that's the other thing I'll say here, is as much as most of the time I feel the commentary is a detraction from the game, I did think Passion Dvorak did a really good job calling this one. And one thing they point out is Purdue, in their bye, basically went over all their own game film look at what was working and what wasn't. And to spend that kind of attention mid-season to analyze your own faults, I think, is kind of a checking your ego at the door thing that most coaches are not going to do. They're just going to assume, look, the stuff that we have works. We just have to do it until it's fixed.
So basically what they did was, would you have a situation where it's like, all right, I can divert. I got engine power. I got shields, lasers, and mobility here, okay? So I can divert all engine power. So I'm in a situation where my shields are low. Divert engine power to shields. But also I'm in an offensive situation. Okay, so what's worked for us so far? David Bell. Divert all engine power to David Bell. That's what happened. Now, you talked about turnover luck going to run out. But that actually didn't happen this game.
What I mean by turnover
luck is... Because Phil Parker schemed one hell of a turnover down there at his own goal line.
I don't want to talk about that play because... Okay, so...
Because we're going to talk about the touchback rule?
We're getting... Well, That generally, but we're also going to get back into the refs reminding all of us who we're all here to see.
Well, you know, it's funny because, the touchback rule sucks, but I also remember, like, man, more than 10 years ago, I think was the first time I really realized that there was a problem with people just kind of, like reaching the very end of the ball and basically just kind of throwing the ball into the end zone for a touchdown.
If you let go of it before you break the plane, then yeah, that's different. But I don't know how you can look at that replay and conclude to the appropriate standard of evidence that that's actually what happened. Because to me, it's way too close to overturn the call on the field, which was touchdown. Yeah. But anyway.
But that's the kind of thing that Iowa got that turnover.
Yeah.
Okay. And then still did nothing with it.
Well, right. Because it's a touchback and they don't. And so their defense is not handing the ball, their offense in field goal range already.
So it's another week on the Off Tackle Empire podcast, and another week that we're going to say, boy, hell of a job of the Purdue defense.
Yeah, and not sarcastically, which again, like, it's pretty clear by this point that we both, being fans of his play style, of his offensive play style and the way he designs.
Well, because if you've got to be middling to bad, I'm not saying that they are, but I'm saying, like,
I mean, look, the overall record is still pretty bad.
My team peaks at middling. Right, I'd much rather play like Jeff Brom's teams than name your Illinois coach.
Hey, Lovie Smith for sure, right? Yeah. I mean, and so,
well, Lovie Smith, poor offense, poor defense, great special teams, turnover luck. All right, but I'm saying like I'd rather like Chris Ash, who had a pretty decent secondary, but who cares? Nobody's ever going to throw the ball.
Yeah, if you can run for 6 yards a carry, why does it matter how good your secondary is?
Right. Well. For Illinois, it's Mike White. I mean, offense puts butts in the seats, right? Whatever. Defense may win games, but offense puts butts in the seats. And what do I generally care about? I generally care about there being a lot of fans at the games that I go to. Because I'm never going to win that many.
Sure. So, which is a long way of saying it's still up in the air whether Brom works out long term. But
which Indiana team do you think we dick ride more?
I mean, this year.
Well, for sure, this year. But in general, I don't know. Tough to say.
Your source for Big Ten Talk, it's Off Tackle Empire!